Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Season 6, Rock That Relationship. We are so excited today that we're actually going to be talking with Colette Barajas. She's a longtime civil rights activist, particularly for the LGBT community, and she describes herself as a voice for those who haven't found their voice yet. So I'm so excited. I actually met Colette at our Pride event in Tucson and talked to her for a little while, and then actually ran into her at a mutual friend's birthday party. And I was like, Colette, I've been wanting to talk to you about being on our podcast. So, you know, we're really, really excited, Colette, to have you here today. So, thank you. Thank you for being here. Maybe, you know, one of the reasons I was so drawn to talking with you is that I had this really neat conversation at Pride with you about the story of Colette's, your bar that you had in Tucson back in the '80s and early '90s. And you told a few stories about how that bar came to be, what the purpose of the bar was, what you were trying to do in having this space for people in the Tucson community, particularly in that era of time. So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Colette's and how it came to be.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's certainly a memorable time of my life. And I just feel very lucky to have been in, I really just say I was in the right place at the right time. But I grew up in hospitality in Chicago. I was 15 and my mom had a gay bar. So I had always been around, the gay bar scene. Her best friend had a boys bar in Chicago. So I was out here wanting to be a veterinarian and started in school and realized that I couldn't get through all the science and the cutting and things. So I stepped, hospitality, took some business classes, and in the gay community was very separate in the late 70s, early 80s until the AIDS epidemic. But my dearest friend DJ'd in one of the which were all boys bars back then. And I couldn't get in because I identified as a lesbian. And it really pissed me off. So I was down the street on First Avenue running a cowboy bar, managing it. And a lot of lesbians used to come in there because they knew I was the bartender. So I decided, screw it, I'm going to open my own bar. And it was funny because the gentleman who was the business broker where I leased the building, you know, everyone tried to convince me not to do it. You know, Tucson wasn't ready. It was late 1983. And I said, well, you know, I need to find a place for women to go and socialize. And unfortunately, back in those days, they were bars. So I had the one on First Avenue for a couple of years. And then being young and the scene in the mid early 80s was drug, sex, and rock and roll, and I participated in all of them and ended up in treatment, got out of treatment and treatment for substance abuse, for people to know what treatment is, and got bored and opened the second Colette's on Speedway. And really the focus was to find a safe environment for women to go and socialize and mingle. And it was interesting because back then we were really the INR, information referral. Our phone rang all day asking for hotels, housing, religious institutions, schools for kids. So we were really just a source of information. And I wanted to have a different establishment. I didn't want to have just a dive bar. So I opened, I found a huge place on Speedway. Across from a police department with the biggest marquee that could possibly be. And so I really used that marquee as an education, a tool to educate the public. We had, you know, happy anniversary, Susie and Betty. We had all the Pride events. And so we put a lot of information. I mean, I really utilized the hospitality business to not only make everyone feel welcome, who came in there, but really to educate, city of Tucson and it people going to work. They'd have to go down past my bar to get to work downtown. And so it was really just, we had some crazy stuff on that marquee.
Tell us some of that stuff. What was up
there? Oh, we would just put, like I say, happy anniversary, you know, 1983. That was a little 1985. We opened over there on Speedway. Happy anniversary. We put all the pride events. Anytime there was a social, something negative, we would put on for people to vote. I would have people, a booth set up in the bar with, to register people to vote. We had the, people probably don't remember, but Meekum, and we were able to get him out of office. He was some crazy, politician, and we, had I don't even know what they call it now. It was different back then. But anyway, we were able to get him, out of office. And then we had a gentleman, Terry Goddard, who ran for governor many times, was attorney general. And so we had him come speak in our bar, and I got a call. The media was on the way. And back then it was not popular for a politician to try to get the gay vote. So we had to sneak him out of the back door because, and the media was coming in the front because it would have hurt his ability to, get into politics back then. So, we weren't able to, you know, we had to sneak him out the back door. So we put lots of just about the importance of voting. We have people at the door to, raise money for AIDS. We had tons of different events raising money. We brought people nationally and from all over the country to perform. We would, and I think really the venue was more about a place to raise money and awareness and safety for women back in 1985 and to 1992. And it was great because we did have the police station right across the street, and it enabled us to, you know, they always came over. I'd be there late at night, and they'd see my car after we closed. I was doing my paperwork and books, and they'd always just call me and say, hey, this is Officer So-and-so. I'm the officer in the area tonight. Here's my phone number. Call me when you go out to your car. So they walked me to my car to make sure that I got out okay, because hate crimes were pretty rampant, and being women, and I had extra lighting to protect the women. So it was a huge parking lot, and on weekends people would wait in line to get in because of the, we had great entertainment. We utilized all of the entertainment, and people don't know the Hockamy store back. Mr. Hockamy, who could walk there, would come in because the bar had previously been a topless bar, because all on Speedway back then were topless bars. So we had a lot of men stroll in thinking it was still a different kind of women's bar. And they'd walk in. I said, well, it's still a women's bar, but it's a different women's bar. So we just really tried to educate people on that LGBT people were the same as everyone else, had families and rights. So those were some of the things on the marquee and just about all the different entertainment we had.
Did you have to like have security at the door pre-screening people come in?
I did. I mean, I did only because for checking IDs, and my dad, he was alive at the time, and he was my security at the front door. And, you know, with most young gals, if you, your father, he's going to be pretty protective. So
I'm really interested in the fact that your parents, so your mom owned a gay bar and your dad was fine working at a lesbian bar. And what, I mean, what year were they born? They were probably born in the
1929. Uh-huh. My dad was a steel worker in Chicago. And my mom was in, lived in an orphanage, but her two best friends were, you know, I don't know what you call back then, transsexuals, transvestites, and both of them were murdered. Hmm. And, you know, found in the alleys because they liked to wear women's clothes. They were men that wore women's clothes, and they were both murdered. And my dad just, you know, when I told him, he was fine, and he retired out here, and he used to go over to the Bay Horse and some little redneck bars, and he'd always put my matches, the clutch matches on the bar, and some guy he'd be playing pool with would say, you know, that's a dyke bar. And he said, yeah, and the dyke that owns it is my daughter. Do you have a problem?
Wow. So you're from some real good people.
Yeah, educating way before. So I was very fortunate to have supportive parents.
That's awesome.
Wow. Can you hang on a half a second? Someone just walked in my office.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I love your parents. I wish I had met them. That's awesome.
They sound like
my dad. Well, you know, when he died, it was so powerful because I brought him home. He had a stroke at the hospital, and for 10 days, our streets were lined with women because he loved to teach women the trades. I mean, he would teach women to tile floors, fix their chimney, build things. And yeah, he was the dad. And I told him, I said, you know, Dad, a lot of these people, you know, women that come here, parents have disowned them. And so he kind of became their adopted dad.
That's so sweet. You need to write a whole book about your parents. About your parents. Yeah. That's crazy. 1929. I mean, my grandparents were similar, but not that involved, you know?
Yeah. I was very lucky.
Yeah.
So Colette, how long did you have the bar?
I opened, the first one on First Avenue, December 19th, 1983. You think I don't remember that day? And we closed August 11th, 1992. And it was, and I don't know if I told you this story, but my partner, she moved here over 20 years ago, and she's just like, oh my gosh, you know, if I hear another story about Colette's, you know, and when are you going to open Colette's? And my niece, who is a lesbian and married now with their first child, came to school out here, and I got her a job at the Biz. And, you know, she would always say, oh my God, Aunt Colette, if I have to hear another story about Colette's, and I wish Colette's was here. And she said, I don't say anything. You know, I'm waiting on these women and they're talking about Colette's. And I finally say, that's my aunt. So, but we were in Tahiti of all places, and, we were at a women's event. And so we walk in, and, you know, obviously we all know we're a bunch of dykes. And so my partner said, oh, hi, I'm Kristen. It's my partner, Colette. And this woman is going, oh, my gosh, I met my wife 30 years ago at a bar in Tucson named Colette. And my wife now said, well, that would be her. So it's the next weekend is the street fair, and I will probably see 20, 30 women and the kids. And I don't know if my most favorite events is during Christmas, I would do Christmas night just for the kids because so many women back, you know, had kids. And I think, I wonder what they think, you know, their mom's like, oh, we're going to Colette's. So I said, I want to have the kids come one night and it just be for the kids and they can see that Colette's is in a scary place. So I'd have all the pinball machines. Back then they were pinball machines and video machines. And my DJs would dress as elves. And I knew this guy, and his name was Nick. And sometimes I wondered if he wasn't Saint Nick. But and I tell all the women, I said, look, if you can't keep your potty mouth clean and, you know, you can't be nice, because I'm going to have all the kids here. And we played, they could pick the music, and we'd have cookies and hot chocolate. And then Santa would come. So the DJ would, you know, every 30 minutes, oh, we just got an update and Santa's over, you know, New Mexico. And I'll never forget Nicholas. He was 3 years old. And I mean, it could just make me cry. He stopped and he said, I hear the reindeers on the roof. You know, and two other kids were like 10, 11, and they're like, ah, there's no Santa Claus. And that night, the first night when they left, they said, thank you for having the real Santa here. And so now I see these kids, and they're married and have kids, and they'll come by my office during the street fair and say, you know, one of our favorite days was going to collect for Christmas. And, you know, and I think it's just really bringing families together and bringing people together to feel safe. And to know, and some of my friends said, well, my boys don't want to come. What if they see another kid from school? And I said, and guess what? Then they know they have gay parents and you're not alone. So it was just so much education happened that I didn't even realize what we were going to do and what we were going to be able to do. And I think, and some people always ask me, do you miss the bar? And I said, you know, I don't miss the late hours. What I miss is the meaningful conversations, you know, of people's lives and what happened to them and being able to share that. And it was a sense of safety and community that I miss. That's just not, you know, you have to go to a large venue to find. You don't find that too often just walking down the street or going into dinner. And so it's a sense of community is really.
You can tell your wife now that I'm going to harass you to reopen. And if not, I'm going to be bugging Corey about our next project because like we haven't had that. I kind of had the Wild Rose, you know, being in Seattle in my younger years. I don't know if you ever went to the Wild Rose up there, but it's a little rougher than sounds like Colette's. It wasn't quite as nice. You know, it sounds like we need that place again. You know, we have some kind of events every once in a while here, but I think that, and I wonder if you've seen this, like, the LGBTQ community and culture is changing over time. We're more fractured. I think because we're more integrated, therefore we're more fractured, which, you know, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you're not going to just live in a gay neighborhood. You're going to be around other people. And so it's great that that's not an issue so much anymore, but sometimes there's a feeling of isolation, not because people are icing you out, but what you're talking about, like, I'm literally having I want that, you know, I really would love to have some place like that, you know,
a place.
And that's really, that's what people came for. And because women don't spend money and don't drink, and I got sober, I also did a huge education in the hospitality industry about alternative beverage because it was the AIDS epidemic. People were on medication. And so I used that venue to really try a lot of experimenting. And my bartenders would just get so crabby. And I said, hey, we're doing this. So I had an extra key. I put a key on the registers for alternative beverages. And on my busiest nights, because we promoted them, we saw 12% of our sales were alternative beverages. I mean, we were the first establishment to have NA beer, which there was only like two maybe back then. But we promoted it. I said, if you promote Jello shots, you have to promote X, Y, Z.
Right.
And it was really... the whole key was about making people feel welcome. If you didn't drink or you, who knows, whatever reason, or you were, you know, sentenced by the city because you had a DUI. It wasn't our business, but it was just to make you inclusive and to be able to have that opportunity to bring people together, men and women, gay and straight, you know, whatever, to feel like they could walk into that establishment and not be judged and be accepted was very powerful. And growing up in hospitality, I knew the key for any establishment is atmosphere and how you create that. And I just feel we did it. You know, we created a sense of safety and community. And again, I have so many dear friends from 40, 50 years ago who just say, oh my gosh, you know, there's never a better place. And that to me is very rewarding because that's what I wanted, but you never know if you're going to get it.
Right.
Yeah. I just wanted to follow up on that because, you know, you had the bar open for several years and even just you've been in Tucson since then. And I mean, what kinds of things have you seen change over time in terms of the culture in our community here in Tucson? But just kind of on a larger scale, what have you seen change around the LGBTQ community in your time in doing this work?
Well, it was interesting because right after I closed, I got so many phone calls because all the men's bars stopped letting women in again. You know, and it broke my heart because I was done. I needed to go on and do other things in my life because there was no money in that business. And my phone just kept ringing. So I had to go and pull meetings together and talk to the guys. Look, you know, if you treat the women well, they'll behave in your bar. But there was just, there's a segment of it was separating again, and we had worked so hard to come together, and especially with the AIDS epidemic, those of us who, you know, went in and helped, took care of our friends who were dying. But the men just didn't want women coming in. So then it took a long time of healing, yet trying to heal again, the discrimination. And it's funny, there's a certain segment of the men's community that's still like that. I don't know if you've been to G3, but they have a G3. And back when it was G2H2, again, my partner was a part of that because those men who started it wanted women to come. But I remember we went to the first one. And these couple old crabby guys who I knew, who I had had dinner with on several occasions at friends' homes. We walked in and they just looked at us and said, what are you doing here? Well, what do you mean? You know, this is community and why do you want to be separate? So that continues to come up and, you know, back and forth in our community with a certain segment, not all of it. And because the world has been more accepting, you don't so much need the bars. I mean, I know with my nieces, they don't go to gay bars. They just go to a bar, but they don't have that sense. They don't even understand it. Or if I go to a large women's event, the younger group, they don't understand what we did to get here. So they don't have that sense.
It's interesting. The G3, I just want to say for our listeners, is like a monthly gay group. So it's kind of a dance party or, you know, something. And so now they're having it at the same bar each time, which is actually a really cool bar downtown Tucson. And I'm generally not a big drinker, but I like to go out. Right. And so, Corey and I were actually at the last one, and I was with, my girlfriend and then another friend, and some older gay guys came up, and this guy was like, it's so great to see you girls here. And I was thinking, what? That's so weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is this deal? But, you know, as a lesbian, it's interesting to meet people who are more recently out or younger. So hanging around younger people, they don't have, like, they have gay friends and stuff. And I just never did. Even though I did AIDS stuff back in the 90s, and I was a cop back in the 90s and dealt with a lot of the gay community in Seattle, there never was crossover. They just didn't want, you know, there was the lesbian bar, and then there were like seven gay bars, and zero interest in being friends or anything like that. And, you know, I've always found that fascinating. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is, a cultural difference between us, but I thought it was interesting at that thing. And then I want to go back to the non-alcohol thing. Like 10 years ago, I was like, oh, I'd love to open a club, right? That's not smoking and non-alcohol, but people can come and hang out. And now on Facebook, I get ad after ad after ad for non-alcoholic drinks, non-alcoholic wine, because a bunch of celebrities are advertising it. So culturally, that's also changing, right? And it's the pressure, I think, anymore so much when you go out, if people are like, are you drinking? Why are you not drinking? Why don't you drink? You know, and I've never been in recovery or anything, but I just don't. I mean, I'll drink occasionally, but I don't need to drink. And I've noticed the past 10 years or so, people kind of chilled out about that. They don't, you know, really harass other people anymore about whether they're drinking or not.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. It is funny though. I just got married, and so we're hiring the bartenders for our wedding. And, you know, they send over the list, and there's nothing, you know, there's Coke, Sprite. And so my wife was taking care of all that. And so finally she said, well, I want you, you know, we got to finalize this. And I said, okay, you know, I'm in the business. I was in the business. This menu sucks. You know, I mean, this is 2023. Mm-hmm. What? So ends up, the guy knew me. He was a gay guy in recovery too. And I had taught him about, I used to teach about responsible beverage service. And I'm like, Chris, what's with this menu? You know, I mean, there's so many alternatives, and I sponsor a ton of events, and there's never anything adult beverage, you know. Oh, well, we've got Diet Coke. Oh, great. You know, I mean, I have a Coke, I have a pop every now and then, but I don't want to go out there's wine, there's Secco. I mean, but it's
now
just
they have, no, now they have non-alcoholic gin and rum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have not. It's like wow. Totally changing. You can
but
just
you
ask
can't
for
find it.
It
at a regular venue. Hmm. Like G3, when I go,
oh,
I was in there
it.
Actually before now something else, and I'm downstairs waiting for Chris to come in. And say, so, what do you got? Oh, it was back in the storage room, warm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they it's just right. Not in the frame of thinking for people, but it is there, and they're opening up a lot of alternative bars. But it's so interesting, and it's like, so I sponsor, you know, I give somebody $3,000, and there's not even one thing for me to drink when I get there, and it's, you know, I get a little pissy, and I don't say it right then, but it's like, really, people? I had to bring my own wine to my wedding because these guys don't know where to buy wine.
Oh, no.
It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm really resonating with is that Colette's was so much more than just a bar. I mean, you were a space for safety, activism, connection, community, family, all of these things. And I think about, you know, the alternative that we have to a place like that is a bar that serves alcohol. And and the idea of actually, I'm not a drinker. And so I go and I get my Shirley Temple at the G3 and they look at me funny and that's fine with me, but it isn't anything more than either alcohol and very loud music. And I wish there was a space that was much more encompassing, like what you had, because that's where the community is created. I remember a few, G3s ago, I went with some friends and the music was so loud, we couldn't even talk to each other. And I thought, this is not a place of connection for me. And this is if I were to even want to ask someone to dance, like they couldn't even hear me. And
you know what it is? This is what I like about the G3 is that it's what we didn't have in high school and college, right? For gay people. So it's like people acting like I was acting like a fool at the last one, just like, you know,
I didn't see you. I was there. I didn't see any fool.
She was acting like a fool. I will substantiate that.
Well, I never make out with someone in public, but whatever they did this time. And, that's the thing is like, I didn't get to do that.
You missed out. You should have.
I didn't do that. I mean, like, you know, that's not something we were able to do in high school and college, right? So those G3s kind of remind me of, but like a high school party, you know, a college party, because really, if you're 50 years old or older, you just didn't have that. Maybe people in their 40s, maybe now 30s. And it is such a different world, right? And for me, like, I love that. I love the G3. I think it's great. You know, it is a place where you see and straight people come, you know,
all
as allies.
Walks, yeah, right? All different types of people. And we used to have a prom every year at my bar, a clutch too, cool. Just because no one got to go to the prom.
Yep.
So we would have people, you know, we'd have a sign up sheet and tell us your high school and your colors. So we would make those crazy little flags you have in high school. And so just, we wanted to give people the things they missed, you know, and, we would have the, queen and queen prom for, you know, different fundraisers, but it was really just so many people missed out on stuff. And so
well, sounds like there's a project for you, Colette, for your retired years. You need to get back into this because it, like, you know, everybody's missing out still. Come on.
No, I keep thinking about it. Like, I mean, the G3 is fine. And I like it, but gosh, something that's more of a community. I love the idea of that connection.
We did do a reunion for a fundraiser. I don't remember who it was for. Oh, probably 20 years ago. And I really did it for a couple of reasons because my niece was working at the women's bar and, you know, it was just the service. It was horrible. I mean, I would go in there and people knew me. And I couldn't get service. So I thought, well, I was going to do it at one of the boys' bars because they were bigger. But I thought, no, let me do it here because maybe they can see how a night should be. That place was packed. I mean, the tip jars, because they were going to charity, were jammed. I mean, the dance floor was packed because I brought my old DJs in. Now it's 10 o'clock and they've got this other gig scheduled, right? Now you have a dance floor packed. People are drinking. You can't move in the place. And I'm in the back of the bar. I'm, you know, serving because everyone wants to, you know, have me make their drink. And, you know, it's so funny because my bartenders, you get so mad because they're like, well, you make a, you don't pour a heart, a stern drink. I said, it's not about the alcohol. It's about the service. You know, it's about the service. It's about the service. And, so here comes the owner and she stops the reunion to have this other gig and the whole place emptied out and there's nothing. I'm like, I would have just said, told the people that she had, oh, gee, you know what? We'll reschedule. You know, look, I mean, the place is packed. Nobody wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have been asking, oh, let's do another reunion. Let's do another reunion. And, you know, thank goodness my bartenders are still alive and my DJs and I'm still alive. You know, we could probably do it. But everybody that worked for me came out and worked that night for free. And it was so much fun. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun.
Well, Corey and I want to be involved in the next reunion.
Okay.
So, you know.
Well, maybe
yes,
we'll do some.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love fundraisers.
Well, Colette, maybe we can switch gears a little bit here because one of the things I did pick up on when we talked the other day, and then you mentioned just now on the podcast, is that you recently got married. So
yes.
Congratulations. That's
Thank
amazing.
You. Congratulations.
And I say that's amazing as someone who has, you know, doing the process of elimination approach to a long-term relationship. And so I'm hopefully eliminated who I need to, and I'm at the right place, but I do love hearing stories of getting married. And maybe if you're, you know, comfortable sharing a little bit about how you and your partner, your wife got together and any lessons that you've learned over the course of your time together about relationships.
Oh, you know, it was funny. We were out last night with some friends and we're driving home and she, you know, I mean, we were very lucky. We have such a sweet relationship. And she said, I just love being with you. And so I love everything about our relationship. Aww. I think, you know, and it was hard because first I had the bar and I had one semi-serious relationship, but it's difficult. You have a girlfriend and you're sending her out and, you know, not necessarily flirt, but you have to be a little bit flirtatious. And I really at the time didn't want to be in a relationship because I had a bar full of women I could pick, you know, and I abused and used my privileges as a bar owner. And, you know, I had, I used to call them back then shiny young things.
You
and
were so, a player, a cougar
yeah.
player.
So one of the things that used to be on my marquee was because I called it the Honey Club. I said, the Honey Club's taking applications. And my office wall just had pictures. And whoever was clipped to my light at the time was the honey of the week. And so, yeah, I was totally, totally bad, but it was fun. But I never said I was in a relationship. I'm dating, I'm having fun. And, you know, I'd get some young girls and I'd be like, oh, you know what? It's not that great. You know, I like to have fun and I'm not serious. And if you're looking for anything more than, you know, 5 minutes, you know, I'm not the gal for you. So when I mm-hmm. decided I hit 40 and I thought, oh, I should start thinking about, you know, I should get serious. Anyway, it took me another 10 years to find the love of my life. And, it's a great story, but way too long. But I think, and then we waited 20 years. I stalked her. I wore her down and she finally gave in. That's the truth. That's my Reader's Digest. And she'll pretty much tell you, but in a different fashion, but, I was on a cruise, an Olivia cruise, probably know Olivia Records. And I used to have Olivia Records in the bar and she was working. She was working and I was working her. And, 7 days, I wore her out. I'd find her in every corner hiding from me. And by the end of the trip, I was staying on in Italy. The cruise was, Nice to Rome and I was staying on in Italy. With some friends, and so we decided at the last day that she said, well, maybe and she lived in Berkeley. I mean, she had a great life in Berkeley, and I'm in Tucson, Desert Rat, and somehow, you know, Kate Clinton?
Yes, the comedian.
Yep.
Yeah.
So she knows Kate and her late wife very well because she had a travel business. My Darling put all the women, Chris Williamson and all the Holly Near, and she put women on the road. Her travel business was musicians. So she had a great life, and I can't believe that I talked her into moving to Tucson, and that she actually asked me to get married on her near our 20th anniversary. And so it's a love story. I mean, it really is. But I think we were both ready, and you know, I knew what I wanted. You know, and what we say is that we had three criteria: faith. We both have a strong faith, family, and friends. And we both had longevity and friendships. You know, I still have Joe. We've known each other since we were 5. I'm 70. Mm-hmm. And we still talk. He lived around the corner. We bowled together. We did trick or treat. And he's one of my closest friends. And he totally accepted me when I came out. And Kristen's two best friends are from fourth grade. So we had that, and our friends, our family was very, very important, and our entire family came to our wedding, and it could make me cry right now because we are so blessed. Aww. And, you know, telling our family, said, you know, you guys just think it's normal because we're so close, but most of our friends don't have what we have, and we don't take it for granted. We nurture those relationships, and, we're both very out in the community and very active in fundraising, but we do cherish our time together and make sure we nurture that and take care of one another and, you know, feed each other's souls. And our, and then we don't have to take care of ourselves. You know, she's not she doesn't get my blood boiling in the morning. You know, I have my passion. And she adds to that passion, and she adds to my life. She is not my life. And
it's the cherry on top. That's what we always talk about on here.
I think that for both of us, it's nice to have someone to walk side by side, or to be able to be comfortable and walk behind. And, you know, when she came here, she stole my spotlight. I mean, it's so funny. We go out, and boys are like, all my, you know, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm carrying her bag, you know. So it's nice to have someone who shines brighter than you. I never had that. I never had an equal. And not to say anything negative about any of the women I dated, but I finally found the person who, you know, told me the truth. Told me when I was, you know, telling my story. She still doesn't, pisses me off. Like, Co, that's not how it went. I said, well, that's my world. Put, you know, I didn't embellish, you know, but, and who stands up to me, you know, or reminds me, you know, I don't think that's not what I remember you told me how you want this to be. Mm-hmm. And I need to hear that. I'm a human being, you know, so I just feel, I hope, you know, I have another 20, 25 years together. We've traveled the waters. We love the beach, and we laugh, and mostly at ourselves. And we have a passion for people.
That's awesome. We're going to be hitting you up, Colette. We're going to become your friends. And, you just have so much to offer, you know, you have so much to offer us and I think the world, you know, at large. And like, I mean, it's incredible. You know, you've lived a life that's really, really made an impact on other people. And, it's awesome to see. And you still have a lot more to do, like reopen.
Reopen, call us and we'll be there.
Reopen. Yeah, exactly.
So Colette, if you know, with all of this stuff that, you know, your own personal experiences and your professional experiences, you know, and seeing that there's generations of the LGBTQ community coming up on your heels, what are some lessons that you've learned over the course of your lifetime that you want to pass on to them? I mean, this is recorded history right here. And I think we have a lot of listeners that could really benefit from just your wisdom that you have.
Really understand that it's not about you. You know, I have learned so much by allowing people into my life. Helping people become their best has made me a better person. you know, opening my real estate company after the bar is because I wanted women to be property owners because that's security. And I wanted to teach my industry about LGBT lives and that they matter and that they deserve respect. So know whoever you come in contact with has something to offer. And if they don't know how to share that or express it, help them learn. Help them learn how to be their best. And I believe that I learned that early on that was my gift that God gave me, is to just share with people that they have value. You know, nothing's about me. You know, I move over and make room because when I make room, I get so much. You know, bringing people into my life and allowing them to spread their wings and to share with me their pain, their joy is so powerful. I mean, my life is so full. It was funny when Kristen first met me, she met someone at work said, "Oh, I heard you met someone on the cruise," and my card was there and she says, "Is that her?" And Kristen said, "Yeah." And she's like, "Oh my God, she's the most filthy rich lesbian in Tucson." And it is so not true. And she called me, "Oh, I just learned something about you that you didn't tell me." And I said, "It's so funny because people feel something." I said, "She's mistaken." I said, "What I have is my spirit and my heart is full." And people sometimes interpret that with monetary. I said, "I don't have much. I have plenty, but I've never had that much because I give it away." But it was so interesting that somebody told her that, and, you know. Wow. And I said, "No, I'm rich. I'm rich in spirit." Wow. I think for people, just walk who you want to be and know that's enough. And if you keep walking with who you want to be, you get to be so much more because people support you. I mean, I have stood in front of this community so many times and have fallen down and they've picked me up. They saw me when I was a bad drunk, falling off my bar stool. You know, they've seen me at my worst and they loved me. And so that's what I get back. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. Just open your hearts for love and you'll be fine.
You're here. Totally agree.
Wow. What a great way to end this. This is fantastic.
And yeah. And a friend requested you on Facebook. So. Thanks for that.
Well, Colette,
thank you. I'd love to go down memory lane.
This was so great talking to you. Of course, we could talk to you for hours and hours. I'm sure that our listeners are going to love hearing all of this. And thank you for just opening up and being vulnerable and sharing things about your life. And, anyways, to all of our listeners out there, until we meet again, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.